This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors of our dominant culture and parent with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement, where I did a solo episode
explaining
the
changes that I'm
making
to my interviews going forward. We're going to be talking about government policy and how governments can shape the environment in which we live, and how we can participate in these processes to help our governments enact decisions that can enrich our families' lives. Ben has a master's degree in public administration, and he also has a political science degree from Brigham Young University. He's worked at all levels of the government, interning for the U.S. Congressman, before moving to a state level at Utah legislation and finding his home in local government. Ben has previously been a city manager and now serves in the town of Florence, Arizona, as his assistant to the town manager and intergovernmental relations and communications manager. Whoa. Okay. Ben is a father of three girls and married to his role model and best friend. So awesome. Welcome, Ben. So excited to have you.
Thanks, Jonah. Happy to be here.
So Ben and I also go way back from before either of us got married. We were living in the same area in Michigan. And so I'm excited to be able to talk to an old friend. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So Ben, tell us a little bit more about your experiences. What inspired you to get into government?
I have no idea. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, I started off my career and when I was at BYU for my undergrad, I was actually majoring in statistics and going down that route, and then went to Chile to serve on a church mission. And while I was in Chile, there was one day where the streets absolutely flooded. The rain started coming down so hard and my house was surrounded on four sides with streets that had all turned into rivers. And so I had to pull up my suit pants and walk across the river really that was in the street. And in the days following that, I'm like, well, why does this happen? How on earth do we live in this world where this has happened here in Chile, but I've never seen anything like it in Michigan or any of the other places that I've lived or visited. And it really started to kind of open my eyes to say, you know what, you need to go into not necessarily politics, but into the administration of government to try and figure out ways to solve problems like that and make people's lives better. So that's really how I got into government in general.
Wow. Yeah. You saw a problem, you saw a need, and you said, I want to help solve that problem. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful to have you on the show to be able to talk about government and policies, because, you know, when I talk about family culture, there's like a micro level of family culture and there's a macro level of family culture, right? There's things we do inside of our homes and there's the things in the dominant culture around us that impact our families as well. And government policies, laws, these are all things that impact our families. And a lot of times we don't recognize that unless there's a hot topic that people are obsessing with and fighting over and are getting a cursory understanding of it because they follow it on their news feed on social media, right? which, you know, that's in and of itself is a whole other conversation, I'm sure. But what is it that you see that's a dysfunctional belief or behavior in our dominant culture that needs to change?
I think for me, you know, as you mentioned, kind of kicking off the process that I started kind of at the federal level as I was entering for a congressman. And then I went to the state level where I was at a state legislature and then I found my home in local government. To me, as I've gone through the different levels of government, the different layers, the reason that I've found my home in local government is because it's closest to the people, closest to the ground. We always say that a family is the basic and most fundamental unit. Well,
hold on, say that last part again, Ben.
Family is the most basic and fundamental unit of society. And local government is the one closest to that. So you can think of it as kind of in different levels that your families make up your neighborhoods, your neighborhoods make up your communities, communities make up your cities, et cetera, et cetera. And so when I think of working for a level of government, there's no level that I think can have more impact than your local government level. Now, that being said, one of the dysfunctions is that we often think in this world of everything is as black or white, as Republican or Democrat, as these polarizing issues. And really for us at the local government level, that's not how it works. There's not a Republican way to pave a street. There's not a Democrat way to provide garbage pickup service. It's just services to enhance people's lives. And so to me, that is the best way that we can effectuate that change, is to really just participate in those local government levels where we're closest to the family and able to make the biggest difference in day-to-day lives.
Wow. So, and to not look at everything as polarizing, right? Is that, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you can even see it as we've dealt with the coronavirus over the last few months. You know, who would have thought that in a pandemic that wearing a mask could be so political, or sending your kids to school versus keeping them at home for homeschooling? Everyone wants to create a label for how you react to those situations, when really, you know, all we all try to do is protect our family the best that we can. And that sometimes involves protecting our liberties, and sometimes it involves protecting the health of our children. And so, you know, I think the real key to it all is maintaining the love and respect for each other, the respect for decisions, and just trying to keep the political, the Republican, the Democrat, the conservative, the liberal, the, you know, however you want to look at it, keep that stuff out and just focus on loving your neighbor, loving one another.
Wow. Yeah. Excellent. That's amazing. And I love that what you're saying, because like it's human nature to want to label stuff. When you said that, like labeling everything and trying to classify everything. And so it's almost like that taken to an extreme is really what is becoming the dysfunction. And it's so much of our politics, so much of the campaigning that our politicians do, and in our media, right? Media is designed to polarize because that's what sells, right? And so it's unfortunate that it's come to a place where it's this need to label and to classify things. It's people are trying to feel safe and secure when they can label things and identify with things, but it's like they've overcomplicated it, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not really that complicated when it comes down to safety, when it comes down to, you know, just trying to meet the needs of your families. Well, why is it, why else has it come to that place, do you think, that it's gotten so polarized?
Well, one thing I would say, Jody, is that, you know, for us, as maybe for me as a municipal employee, but even going back to when I worked at the state level or at the federal level, it's not polarizing for me. And maybe that's me as a unique individual, and maybe others do make it more polarizing. But I've seen things at every single level where really we're trying to say, what is this policy impact going to be on our community, on our family, on the individuals that live within the area? I'll give you a quick example. Even when I worked for Congressman McCotter, who was in Michigan, you know, there was a bill going before Congress, and it was supported by the Republican Party. He was a Republican. And so, you know, naturally he was like, okay, I think I'm going to support this bill. Well, sooner or later, we started getting phone calls into the office, and it was a lot of phone calls. And every single phone call that came into the office, we would document in a software so that we would know where the constituents stood on any given bill or any given proposal that's before Congress. And so sooner or later, we started seeing there were dozens of people that were opposed to this bill within the district, and there were one or two that had called in support of the bill. And it turns out that the bill just made a little minor change to the sugar beet industry. And who knew that we had sugar beets in Michigan and in the district, and all these people were growing sugar beets, and somehow there was a little provision within this bill that was going to negatively impact the sugar beet industry and the dozens or hundreds of families that receive their livelihood industry. And so at that point, the congressman switched his position and ended up being a staunch in staunch opposition to the proposal because of the impact on our community. And so I think that that is where you look for the value in public service, is where you're finding those people. It's not always black and white. It's not always the Republican versus the Democrat. It's really, how are we going to improve our society, and how do we improve our community, our neighborhoods, and our homes? And to me, that was a great example very early on in my career, where I could see, although it was a difficult position to go against the I guess, standard of his political party, particularly given how strong those are on a national level, that congressman at that point made a decision that for him, it was more important to fight for his district, and got things changed so that it didn't negatively impact the district.
But do you feel like that's a rare occurrence, especially on the national level?
Yeah, I think that it doesn't need to be rare.
Yeah.
It can be rare currently, but it doesn't need to be. I'm sure others like myself have gotten the email chains or the phone calls or just the conversation with your neighbors that are like, contact your congressman, this needs to change. And we just say, okay, I'm going to do it. And we don't actually go home and do it. And then, you know, we expect things to change. The change really does begin with us. And I really feel strongly that in our representative government, and this is at all levels, this isn't just a federal or a statewide, but also it applies to local and probably even neighborhood on your HOA level or whatever it is. You know, the people that are elected into office or are serving as representatives really do want to represent their people. But if they don't hear from them, all they can do is rely upon the information they have. Mm-hmm. I've met a single person in government, whether it's at the national level, the state level, or the local level, that wants to harm families, that wants to do something that will negatively impact their community. Everybody has always tried to do their best to serve those that they represent. And, you know, I think everyone has that servant mentality and really try to do the best for the community that they can. But sometimes if we don't do our part, then it makes it harder for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So when people start trying to, create this animosity or cohort type of culture that, oh, well, we're Republicans, so we support these certain policies and things like that, or we're Democrat, we support these certain policies. And you know, like you said, this whole idea of the face masks becoming so politicized and things like that, like at some point in this process of the COVID pandemic, it was like, it became political. And so people who are like, well, I identify as this, so therefore I'm against, or vice versa. So what can we do? How can we recognize that rhetoric or that, you know, those campaigns or those, what's the word I'm looking for? Propaganda of things that are trying to polarize and create that animosity.
I think from my perspective, it takes leadership, and it's not necessarily and exclusively leadership within our political class, but also leadership on a much smaller scale. Lead where you stand, you know, lift where you stand is an often used phrase where, you know, if you're standing somewhere and things are bad there, it's kind of your duty to lift others from where you stand. You know, another example from my career that, you know, seems kind of silly at the time, but looking back, you can kind of see some of those tea leaves that you read and try to improve your society. In a previous community that I worked for, we had been gifted 40 acres of land in the 1970s. This land overlooked a river. It was on a hill, just absolutely beautiful territory. And in the 70s, it was used, or it was given to the community to be used for trails, for hiking trails. And nothing had happened for that for 40 plus years. And, you know, I found the deed for this property, and I couldn't understand why those trails were never built. And so I started going through it, and I made a proposal to the city council and said, you know, I think that now is the time. We need to improve the health of our community. We need to improve opportunities for our families to bond together. Now's the time to build these trails. And so initially it was a city council of five people. Three voted in favor of the trails and two voted against the trails, just because, you know, budgets are always tight and we didn't want to spend the extra funds, or it might've been dangerous or what have you. And so where I think the leadership comes in is the next step that follows. When you don't have consensus, when people disagree, you find a way to bring them together. And to me, the way I did it at that point was, you know, we need to have a public meeting and bring the community and the council together and see what the fears are. And so we actually took post-it notes and red post-it notes we put on one wall and said, all of your fears, all of the concerns that you have, put them over on this wall and write them in on the red post-it notes and stick them to the wall over here. And then all of your hopes and your wishes and what you want to see, what you think could be great, put them on the green post-it notes and put them over on this wall. And so we went through this exercise, and the community and the city council put all of their hopes and fears and looked at those different things. And then we gathered them all together, addressed each of those, all of the hopes. We said, okay, we can't do this. We're just not going to be able to have the finances to do it, or we're not going to be able to have the time to do it. But then on the other side, all of the fears, okay, how do we address this? How do we make it so that the person living right next to the trails doesn't feel like people are looking into his back window? And how do we make sure there's not extra fire danger? And so we went through and addressed every single one of those points. And so that was listening. And the listening really assisted in getting everyone on the same page, so that when we finally were able to get the grants and were able to build things and then have the ribbon cutting, ultimately, all five of the city council members were at that ribbon cut. And that's where I think the leadership qualities and listening, those things pay off. And that's where I was at that point. I could only lift where I stood and help the people get to a consensus where maybe there wasn't one at the first point, but we can all do that in our communities. Every single day we face challenges, and all we can do is be a leader in the positions where we are, and just try to influence others for good.
Wow, that's so cool. So I love that when you're describing that too, that process that you were willing to have a discussion is really cool, first of all. And I kind of pictured that kind of facilitation of fears and hopes and things like that, being able to do something like that in our homes even. And so that's a practice that as parents we can do to help prepare our kids to understand the process of policymaking and the process of voting and all these different kinds of things. What else can we do inside of our homes as parents to be leaders and to customize our children? What's the word I'm looking for? Conditioning our kids to understand that this is a normal part of our existence as citizens, to participate in the facilitation of discussions and problem solvings and forming policies. What else could we do?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I have a very limited scope in terms of my knowledge of others' families, but I can give, you know, even some discussions with my own family that we've had, both growing up or even now with my three daughters and my wife. Now, we regularly talk about problem solving and how we may see the world differently from other people. You know, right now, my daughter's best friend, she hasn't been able to play with her recently because the parents and us may see differently in terms of when to wear masks, how to wear masks, if to wear masks, as it relates to the coronavirus. And we try to protect our children as best we can. And so mm-hmm. had to sit down and have a difficult conversation with our daughter saying, you know, right now we're not limiting you in terms of your potential, but we're certainly trying to limit our exposure to others, not just this individual friend, but any friend, as we're trying to do our best to be community stewards and help to slow the spread of this terrible pandemic. And it's been difficult as certainly we've gone into summer months, and I want to go to the pool and I want to go to my friend's house, and you know, months and months of being cooped up. But we have those discussions, and really, I think as you mentioned a few minutes ago, having open discussion and not being afraid to talk about difficult concepts with our children or our spouses or our families. I mean, I think that we've got to just be able to be frank about things at times and just have those conversations without trying to make, again, it, as it relates back to government, without trying to make it political or without trying to make sides kind of portion it into different segments of a population, but just trying to say they believe differently than us, and that's fine. I mean, we see the world differently, but you know, ultimately we can still be friends and we can still be kind and love one another despite our differences.
That's so cool. And I like that you say that, having those conversations, because really something like talking about government, talking about politics, even talking about these things, as parents, we need to facilitate those conversations in order to normalize that discussion, right? Like if the first time they've had a discussion about government is when they turn 18 or, you know, the right time to vote, that's still too late, right? So we lead out in those conversations, normalize the discussion and model that behavior for them. If our kids never see us go out to vote, or we never talk about, hey, we're going to go vote, then they're not going to think about it ever in their childhood. So it's modeling those things for them, that this is something that we care about. It's something that matters. It's our right to be able to participate in and to not just sit by and watch things happen like a train wreck or something, but we can, you know, we can help and lend our voices and lend our feelings and our values to shaping what's going on. That's cool. Cool. So you shared with me in my form here that you wanted to share this link to, it's called myreps.datamade.us. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah. So I think as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we're kind of hesitant to reach out. We're kind of hesitant to become involved, or we don't know how to become involved. And so the link I provided was just an easy way for us. And there are hundreds of these links. This one may not be anything special compared to any other one. So if you have your own favorite, by all means, use it. But just an easy way where we can reach out to all levels of government, because voices do make a difference. You know, we... And on the local, you know, city council level, we don't hear from citizens very often. I mean, it's particularly in smaller communities. I've worked for, you know, cities as large as 55,000. And I mean, I think officially my smallest community right now, which is, I guess, 12,000 plus 16,000 in the large gated community that we call the penitentiary. So there's 28,000 total, but really 12,000 that may attend meetings. And really, we don't get people coming to the meetings very often. And so when our city council is budget and deciding, you know, should we put money towards a park, or should we put more money to widening a road that's key here? No, they will go and talk about it with their constituents in the public and those that they come in contact with. But really, many times we don't hear from the general public, and we try and reach out and we try and say, you know, participate in this survey or participate in, you know, this forum. But we don't hear from people very often. And so the more your voice can be heard, the more that viewpoint will come through, and we'll be able to adapt and hopefully create better policy because it's more participatory.
Wow. So that's awesome. So this will help you to find your local and state and national federal representatives to be able to reach out to them. Yes, that's perfect. So, you know, because that's it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we don't think about that as much as, you know, we hear a lot of people complaining about it, but are all those people showing up? That's like, if I'm going to complain about something, then I have to be willing to volunteer to do something. I mean, it's come on, there's give and take.
While protests and, you know, staging areas out front of, they all have their place. And that's a First Amendment right. And by all means, people should be free to do that. But it may often not have the same consequence or may not have the same impact as a simple phone call or an email. And so a lot of times where we as policy drafters and the city council or elected officials as policy makers are setting those policies, well, just a phone call may change an opinion or may have them look at something differently that may improve that ultimate policy. They may not be similarly persuaded by a large gathering of people that they view as kooky or
right.
They
have their own opinions. Yeah. So that's interesting because, you know, especially with the climate right now of all the anti-racism marches and things like that, you know, that it's systemic, you know, they're all the voices are saying this is a systemic problem, right? Well, then you need to address the system. You need to address those policies and lend your voice to those people who are shaping those policies. So
and by all means, it's welcome. Anyone that provides that input, we take it. And kind of, as I mentioned earlier, we try to, while we may not always have consensus on every single issue, as it relates to a vote, we try to incorporate the best opinions and the best ideas from all sides into a policy to make the policy the best we can. You know, I go back, every single person that I've come across wishes the best for our communities and wishes the best for our families.
Yeah.
Really tries hard to make sure that they're creating an environment wherein these families can succeed. And so if again, you can make your voice heard to these elected officials, that it really can have an impact directly upon your family and upon your day-to-day lives as we're creating the amenities or providing the facilities wherein you can enjoy your lives.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. There's so many things that will impact, and you start to, if you do the research, you'd start doing and lending your voice, then you can shape that. And it can be, you know, because so many people are like, oh, what can I do? What can I do? And if I teach my children or I do it in our family, that's not going to impact all of society. Well, it does. It adds up. It's going to, and those children are going to grow up and they're going to lend their voices. And so it starts now. It starts now with addressing these things and teaching them and shaping the culture to what we believe and helping to break from dysfunctional patterns and beliefs. So awesome. Well, cool. Ben, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this and being able to share these resources and experiences. Where can we connect with you if people want to connect with you and learn
different ways? I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, Benjamin R. Bitter are my handles for both. So you can reach out to me on either of those. My contact information readily available, as most government workers is. It's kind of public information. So track me down and hunt me down if I can help with any.
Nice. And I'll put the URL to that, my reps, inside of the Family Success Toolbox, which anybody can sign up to be participating in. And I'll give that information at the end of the episode. So thank you so much, Ben. I enjoyed talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jody.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with guest Lisa Ann Fontana. Lisa created the character Citizen Cupcakes and designed welcome parties to help current non-voters get comfy in their country. Again, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Help more people find the show. Download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Success Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember to set your intentions for your family culture and lead your family toward your vision of success.